Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Central banks around the world follow the Fed in raising interest rates to fight the effects of a soaring dollar and growing inflation, and why some U.S. lawmakers are pushing to send advanced drones to Ukraine.
These lawmakers are saying that we owe it to the Ukrainians to give them everything that they've asked for, in this case drones, to help them maintain that advantage, to maintain the momentum that they have right now, and to continue to keep Russia on its heels.
Plus, why some of your fall favorites might be missing from the grocery aisle this season, and it's not because of the supply chain. It's Thursday, September 22nd. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that move the world today. Central banks around the world raised interest rates today, following the Federal Reserve's 75 basis point increase yesterday. For the Bank of England, it was the seventh consecutive hike. Before the news came out, the British pound briefly fell to its lowest point against the dollar in 37 years. Switzerland also announced an increase, bringing its lending rate above 0% for the first time since 2014. Japan kept its policy rate low, but intervened in the currency markets for the first time in more than two decades. It announced it was selling dollars and buying yen as it tries to slow down a slide in the Japanese currency. Those rate increases have added to investor fears that the battle to control prices could bring a recession. U.S. stocks closed in the red, extending losses from yesterday. The Nasdaq fell 1.4%, the S&P lost 0.8%, and the Dow was down 0.4%. Here's markets reporter Matt Grossman.
Investors are really taking the time to absorb the full breadth of what they heard from Jerome Powell yesterday. And I think a lot of traders were picking up on some things that he said that they took as maybe more ominous signs of what's ahead. One investor today told me that he was really struck when Jerome Powell said that the odds of a soft landing for the economy may be growing more remote, which again is a sign that the Fed is really committed to getting interest rates up, getting inflation down, even if that does start to mean a slowdown in growth and higher unemployment.
Mortgage rates keep climbing. The average 30-year fixed mortgage rose to 6.29% this week, according to Freddie Mac, the highest level since the 2008 financial crisis. This marks the second week in a row that rates have topped 6%. Wall Street Journal housing reporter Nicole Friedman says the steep climb in mortgage rates is putting would-be sellers in a tight spot.
Almost 90% of mortgages right now have an interest rate below 5%. And more than two-thirds have an interest rate below 4%. So lots of people right now have locked in really low borrowing costs on their current home. And that makes it a much tougher decision. Do you give up your current mortgage and sell your home? And then to buy a new home, you have to take out a mortgage at a much higher rate. You know, right now, rates are above 6% on average. And so for somebody who has a current mortgage below 3%, that's more than double that they would be having to pay in interest.
The U.S. and its allies used today's U.N. Security Council meeting to call for an investigation into Russia's alleged war crimes in Ukraine. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said that includes shelling of residential buildings and torture and killing of victims.
We support a range of national and international efforts to collect and examine the mounting evidence of war crimes in Ukraine. We must hold the perpetrators accountable for these crimes.
Still, allies didn't propose concrete measures. Russia is a permanent member of the Security Council and holds veto power. Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, meanwhile, made counter-accusations, saying the West is provoking the war by giving Ukraine weapons. We'll have more on new calls for the U.S. to support Ukraine with drones later in the show. In a Fox interview last night, former President Donald Trump claimed that a sitting president can declassify documents, quote, by thinking about it. But legal developments this week undercut that argument. Yesterday, a federal judge said the DOJ could keep control of about 100 classified documents seized at Mar-a-Lago. Earlier this week, a special master appointed to oversee the case told the Trump team they had to show specific evidence of a declassification order. Aruna Vishwanatha, who covers the Justice Department for The Wall Street Journal, says these decisions are good for the DOJ's case.
So it means that the Justice Department can resume its investigation. And by all accounts, they want to get this done pretty swiftly. The federal judge's order from last week to appoint the special master and have them review also the classified documents, that was potentially setting back their investigation by months. So for the Justice Department, they can continue full speed ahead. For Mr. Trump's legal team, it was a pretty big setback. And it looks like they're going to have to answer questions about why he was hanging on to these documents and whether he believes he declassified some of them sooner, potentially, rather than later.
And Tesla is recalling more than 1 million of its electric vehicles over concerns the car's windows could pinch passengers when they close. The recall applies to certain Model 3 vehicles, Model Ys, Model S, and Model X vehicles, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. The company plans to perform software updates for affected vehicles, and in a safety report, Tesla said it wasn't aware of any crashes, injuries, or deaths associated with the malfunction. Coming up, a bipartisan group of U.S. lawmakers is pushing to send advanced weaponry to Ukraine. We'll talk about how Russia's recent saber-rattling is shifting the perspective on the war after the break.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Since Russia invaded Ukraine in February, the U.S. has steered clear of giving Kyiv advanced drones. But now, a bipartisan group of 17 lawmakers write in a letter to Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin that the time has come. This is after Ukraine regained significant ground in a counteroffensive, and as Russian President Vladimir Putin says he will call up 300,000 reservists and could even consider a nuclear strike. The Wall Street Journal's national security correspondent Nancy Youssef got a chance to see that letter to the defense secretary, and she's here now. Hello, Nancy.
Great to be with you.
The U.S. has sent Ukraine more than $15 billion in military and security aid. What kind of additional weapons are these lawmakers saying the U.S. should send, and what kind of advantage would they provide on the battlefield?
So these are called Gray Eagle drones, and they're amongst the most sophisticated military drones available. They have the ability to fly for over 24 hours. They're able to travel for more than 2,000 miles. They are able to gather a lot of data on the ground such that for a Ukrainian fighter, for example, could have really detailed eyes on a Russian position inside Ukraine. And they're able to launch Hellfire missiles. And so those drones, coupled with the kinds of traditional military equipment we've seen operating in Ukraine, Ukrainians argue give them a big advantage in their push to reclaim territory, to push Russian forces out.
You've been following the issue of American weapons supply to Ukraine for months, and one concern that Americans have voiced is that giving Ukraine high-powered weapons risks escalating the conflict. What does this letter tell you? Is the U.S. changing its position?
What these legislators say is that while they've heard the argument for escalation, that for Ukraine to hold the territory that they've reclaimed in the last few weeks, remember, they've taken back 3,500 square miles in a matter of weeks, that they need more advanced weapon systems, that it's not enough to ask them to keep using well-worn U.S. and allied systems on the battlefield. They foresee a Russia that will try to take back territory, that the Russians have far more fighters than the Ukrainians, and they have many more weapon systems. And so these lawmakers are saying that we owe it to the Ukrainians to give them everything that they've asked for, in this case, drones, to help them maintain that advantage, to maintain the momentum that they have right now, and to continue to keep Russia on its heels.
Give me some detail on the ways that Putin has responded to Ukraine's gains on the battlefield. And how do you think Putin's recent steps are impacting thinking in Washington?
So this week we saw a very bellicose speech from Vladimir Putin, in which he made two major pronouncements. He said that the Russian Federation would mobilize 300,000 reserve forces to go into the battlefield in the next few weeks or months. And in addition, he said that he sees the U.S. and its allies as the aggressor on Russia, and that while the U.S. has nuclear weapons, the Russians have nuclear weapons as well. It was a very direct and forceful threat of the use of nuclear weapons, albeit without providing specifics. And so it really, I think, raised concerns among some about the lengths that Vladimir Putin would go to try to reclaim territory, to reclaim the momentum of the war.
Ukraine has been pushing back on the Eastern Front in areas where Russian-aligned leaders are planning to hold referendums starting tomorrow on whether they should be annexed to Moscow. If the Americans were to give Ukraine these more advanced drones, is there a risk they might be used in these areas that are potentially formally annexed by Russia?
Well, I think that's one concern that the U.S. has, is that once you give Ukraine any kind of weapon, but certainly drones, that they could either end up in Russian hands, that they could be mistakenly used, that they could lead to an escalation of an already very tense situation. And so the referendum really, I think, signaled Russia's escalation in its plans to try to annex parts of Ukraine. What we're seeing, I think, more than anything, is efforts on the United States side to support Ukraine without leading to escalation, and on Russia's side trying to escalate as a way to regain the momentum of this war, to sustain its gains, to legitimize what they've done through what the U.S. has described as a sham process.
Right now, there are 17 signatories on both sides of the political aisle on this letter. Do you get a sense that it's going to convince leadership and decision makers in Washington?
I think what it really says is that this war, from some legislators' perspectives, is at an inflection point and therefore demands a shift or change or a modification in how the U.S. supports Ukraine. And so as I read this letter, what I read is the beginning of a debate amongst allied capitals around the world. What is the best way to support Ukraine going forward, particularly as we enter a winter, which in and of itself could lead to changes on the battlefield?
And speaking of world leaders, the UN is meeting this week in New York. Yesterday at the UN General Assembly, President Biden condemned Putin and the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Today, the Security Council met, where Russia, of course, is a permanent member and has veto power. Is there a sense in the UN that Ukraine's battlefield gains are helping galvanize support around the world? Or are you seeing leaders also looking for off-ramps to the conflict?
So I think what we saw in the UN is, amongst Ukraine's supporters, an opportunity to speak with one voice on the floor of the UN about the situation in Ukraine, to condemn what Russia has done, to call for investigations, particularly amid reports of mass graves, but also an understanding that because Russia is a permanent member, that there are limits to what the United Nations can do in terms of action, because, of course, Russia would veto any effort to punish or condemn officially their operation in Ukraine. We saw the Russians defending themselves. We also got a window into countries like China, which tried to use the floor of the UN to reiterate its position. So we really saw, I think, a pounding on the desk, if you will, by all sides on their position on the war, but not a fundamental change either in those positions or in the UN's ability to create change in the war itself.
That was the Wall Street Journal's national security correspondent, Nancy Youssef. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And finally, Trader Joe's, the grocery store, is known for its private label products with quirky and seasonal flavors. And this time of year is big. Butternut squash mac and cheese, caramel apple mochi, and pumpkin ice cream, just to name a few. But those flavors aren't forever. And our reporter Ray Smith says the potential supply crunch is leading shoppers to hoard their favorites.
We spoke to a woman who bought a bunch of these potato chips because she was nervous that they were going to run up, and she wanted to make sure she had enough for fall. And by the time she got to her third bag of them, she realized they were stale and she had to throw the rest away. So that's an example of how, you know, if you're hoarding Trader Joe's products, you may want to make sure that you check the expiration date.
And that's What's News for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.